Welcome to the Phil Henry Show, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, hour two here, Halloween night, and hope wherever you are across the expanse of the United States of America, we are out here on the furthest western edge, the furthest western edge of the continental expanse, and right behind us is the glittering Pacific Ocean. Nothing haunted out there, nothing spooky out there, just a lot of dark water. You ever gone body surfing at 4 a.m., bud?
I don't do that.
Why not?
Man, you get me out there, no way.
Are you kidding? No, I mean, that's the creep. You want to do something creepy? I got something for you that will just creep you out. And all it is the following thing. Go out and swim in the ocean at 4 a.m.
Get out of here, man. What about a shark and stuff?
Forget about sharks. You don't even... That's the least of your worries. Go out and body surf, but not just swim. Try and body surf at 4 a.m. Now, you have to be a good swimmer. I wouldn't suggest anybody doing this.
Oh, and you're a good swimmer?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. Yes, yes. Thank you for asking, because yes, I am. Okay? I would not recommend... I'm a damn good swimmer. And not only am I a damn good swimmer, but I can body surf. So what I'm trying to say here is it sounds like a lot of fun. Unless you're a good swimmer, don't do it, but...
Doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. It sounds creepier than hell. You gotta have a screw loose on that one.
Well, it is creepy. It's creepy as hell. You're right. You go out there at 4 a.m. pitch black.
Oh my God! And what's the point of this?
Well, I'm just saying. You know, theoretically there's nothing more dangerous in the ocean at night than there is in the daytime.
Yeah, there is. On account of the sharks will go feeding and everything.
Get out of here with when the... Let me tell you something about sharks. Yeah, they feed. Yeah, they feed in shallow water. Yeah. If I went out there at the exact time that sharks are supposed to be feeding, okay, and started swimming around, I mean, the likelihood of me getting eaten or even bit by a shark is just about as much as any other time, okay? I've been out there... First of all, the water out here, and we're on the Pacific coast, and yes, there are shark attacks out here. There's this poor kid up here off of Lompoc. You remember that one, Robert?
Yeah, that kid, he was out surfing.
He was out surfing with a buddy. They went off of Lompoc, which is up the coast here near Vandenberg Air Force Base, and there's a...
Well, it's up near that prison, which is what I thought initially was the problem.
What was the problem with the kid getting bit?
Well, he's up around a prison. I don't know.
Yeah, but what's a shark going to do?
I said I don't know, but wouldn't you be concerned?
If my kid was surfing near a prison? Not really, unless there's an escaped prisoner.
Yeah, in a shark suit.
Would you shut up? What's so funny about this?
Wait, hold on for a minute. Why am I going to be worried about a prison near an ocean? I'm talking about sharks.
I am talking about sharks. Never mind, I just would be concerned if my son was up surfing near prisoners and sharks. It doesn't sound safe.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, there's prisoners and sharks, and the whole thing is just kind of messed up, but the prisoners aren't going to do anything. They're in the prison.
How do you know they're not going to go out and try to kidnap someone?
Yeah, that's what I need to do, Margaret. I'm going to escape from prison. The first place I'm going to look to, like, hijack a car is swim out, get a kid on a surfboard.
Ow!
Don't laugh at me.
Margaret, it's a pretty stupid idea.
I didn't say swim out and hijack a kid on a surfboard.
All right, well then, if you're a prisoner and you escape from prison, the first thing you're going to do is, I guess you're going to look for a car. I'm not necessarily going to go over to the beach and try to find one, maybe something close by, you know.
Phil, I don't like it when you talk down to me. I understand that there are holes in my theory, but as a mother, I'm telling you.
All right, as a mother, I accept what you're saying, you know, but I'm also saying, as a guardian and father, I wouldn't get too crazy about that. I would be more worried about the kids out in the ocean. What happened was this. And this poor kid, I mean, the family, this is devastating. The poor kid was out with his buddy. They were surfing. He got bit. Just bit. There wasn't any chewing of limbs. He didn't get eaten. He just got bit once. As we've often heard, these sharks will sometimes sort of take a bite, testing, or if you will, the prey, to see whether it is indeed prey or is it something else. We've come to learn that they're not exactly all that, you know, they don't favor humans as a food source. We're pretty much probably a natural enemy to them. And that's all that happened to this young man. He was bit, but the shark hit his femoral artery.
Oh God!
And so that was the end of that. And I don't think the poor kid made it to shore. His friend brought him in, but I think he was gone by the time he got there. So, look, sharks, and that was up in deep, cold water, all right?
Well, if you saw Jaws.
Get out of here with Jaws, will you, for crying out loud, Jaws?
Well, yeah, you. What about it?
Jaws ain't exactly what I call a movie. Hey, let me see. I want to know all about sharks. I think I'll go see Jaws. You know, what you want to see...
You said Shaws.
Well, Robert Shaw was in it.
I'm not talking about Shaws. I'm talking about Jaws, okay? This isn't a movie about a multitude of Robert Shaws. If it was, then we could call it Shaws.
That's a pretty good idea, but I know it's lame.
Yeah, it's pretty lame. So, this was in deep water... In the Pacific Ocean, which is not the warmest ocean, our ocean over here is, compared to the Atlantic, is pretty, the water is fairly cold, you know. Even in the summertime, you're not going to get into water that's much more than in the upper 60s, maybe, or low 70s, something like that. So this was a situation, and they'd never been out there surfing before. It seemed like a good spot. They went out. I think they went out a good distance. And I don't know whether they paddled out there or they were on a boat. I don't know, but that's where they were attacked. So I'm telling you, you know, just for the creep factor alone. I'm not saying you know anything other than this. The creep factor. If you're a good swimmer and you know what you're doing, swimming in the ocean at 4 a.m., just going out there and catching one wave is about as creepy. And spooky a thing.
What's it feel like, man? Yeah, it's you know, all that black water.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's nothing but inky water all around. It's dark. Everything outside is dark. The water's dark. You know?
Well, you could let your imagination run wild, for God's sake. I think that would drive you mad. I know it would drive me mad, just being in that water.
Drive you mad?
Yes, I'd be driven insane with the mental image of eels and, oh...
Yeah, you know, who knows, you know?
Eels? You trying to tell me, get out of here.
Yeah, if you get out in that water, and all you got to do is let your imagination run wild for about 5
Oh, my God, you really are sadistic.
Well, you know, you're sitting there, you're thinking about, what the hell is under me here? I mean, I'm in this water, it's dark, and, you know, for all I know, there's like this giant sea serpent. I got freaked out one time when I was snorkeling in the Caribbean, and I was with my little daughter, Catherine. She was only about 10 at the time, but we were snorkeling together. And all of a sudden, I'm looking down with my mask, and all of a sudden there's this gigantic ship. It was a wreck. And I know the guy said that there'd be a wreck over there. He said, there's a ship over there. You guys can snorkel and take a look at that. But just the idea of this enormous structure that was not natural, or at least it didn't look... It was, first of all, it was man-made. It was a ship that had been sunk. But even if it had been a rock formation, something that was unfamiliar... See, I'm the kind of guy, I get freaked out by all that stuff. That's why I don't scuba dive.
Oh, that's right. You're chicken when it comes to scuba diving.
Well, oh, and you're not?
Frank and I have been scuba diving. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, all right, Margaret, see? There's one you got on me.
You don't like to scuba dive?
No, I don't. I've never had a thing for scuba diving. It creeps me out going down there with gigantic blowfish and weird-looking... sea serpents and stuff.
There ain't no sea serpents down there, man. But there might be a shark and stuff like that. I don't go down there.
There's no shark. And even if you see a shark, what you do is you just scare it off.
How?
Well, you just go, ooh, you know, boo.
Boo? You're underwater.
You don't. I'm saying you just make motions.
Well, what, with your hands or something?
Well, you kick at it, you know.
Well, I don't know. All right, so, I don't know if I'd take that advice, Margaret.
Well, it's better than you. Hey, let's go body surfing at 4 a.m. We can't see anything. If we're lucky, we might break our necks and no one will find us.
Oh, come on. All right, folks, coming back here, we got Don Mixa on the line with us from the University of Washington. He's going to talk to us about the Amityville murders. This is a part two of our investigation of ghost stories and stuff like this.
There are no ghosts of the Jack Ripper, though.
No, that's a very good point. I don't think there have ever been any ghosts reported relative to the Jack the Ripper thing, but certainly have been reported relative to the Amityville murders, and we will talk about those and what sort of spawned what has become a multi-million dollar franchise of books, of movies, of novels, of interviews. And it blows my mind, man, because... It could be any place. It could be any murder. It could be any bad event that could be turned into suddenly millions of dollars. It's a great country, folks, and it's getting greater all the time. All right, world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com back on this Halloween night. Right after these messages, don't forget to get your backstage pass. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And we're here, by the way, at 855-500-7445. And we have Don Mixa coming up with us here in just a second or two as we will talk to him about the Amityville murders, the Amityville horror, the Amityville, thing.
Now, I have a number of people that have emailed me and have tweeted me on Twitter, or on Twitter, rather. And they've all said the same thing. They said, what is with Phil and the fact that he doesn't buy the idea of ghosts? What's your story? What's the background there? Are you kidding? Are you whistling in a graveyard? What is that?
I don't say that I don't believe in ghosts. I say that the belief in ghosts is overblown and over... People talk about it so much that it's, oh, well, sure, ghosts. I remember when they thought poltergeists were actually little ghosts, and now they believe it to be some kind of kinetic energy of some kind that they're not exactly sure how to quantify this or what it is, but they're less likely to believe that poltergeists are ghosts and more likely to believe that this poltergeist phenomenon has something to do with energy. So I think that as human beings, if we really are all that impressed with ourselves as thinking rational creatures, and that we're so modern and we're so this and we're so that, then to sort of harken back to our past as primitives and believing in ghosts doesn't make any sense. I think it's most people believe in ghosts because it's an entertainment thing.
All right, well, that's enough. I didn't want you to go and give a speech.
Yeah, you gave a speech.
What do you mean I'm giving a speech? Man, what is it with you guys?
Well, you're starting to give a speech. We have Professor Mix on the line. He want to talk about everything he knows about it.
Yes, Professor Mixa is...
Let's get Professor Mixa. I don't want to sound like I'm a jerk. Don Mixa on the line with us from Seattle, Washington. Don, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Phil.
All right, Don, we're talking here about the Amityville murders, the Amityville horror, or whatever the hell you want to call it. Give us some background on Amityville, on these events. Now, before you do, I want people to know that this did have a beginning in actual murders that were committed, correct?
Well, that is exactly right, Phil. It was in the early evening hours of November the 13th in 1974. The patrons at Henry's Bar, which was a tavern located at the corner of Merrick Road and Ocean Avenue in Amityville, they were talking and they were having their beers and they were doing what you do during the evening when you're having a cocktail. And all of a sudden, Ronald DeFeo, he was known as Butch to the locals, he opens the door to the bar and he says, "You got to help me. I think my mother and father are shot." And this was around 6:30 in the evening, and one of the patrons that was there, Robert Bobby Kelski, who was an out-of-work brick mason and Butch's best friend, he raced with his friend who had fallen to his knees crying hysterically. He was pleading for help. He says, "Bobby, help me. Somebody shot my mother and father." And Bobby says, "Are you sure they're not asleep?" And he says, "No, I saw them." So they went up to the house, and also a guy by the name of John Altieri was there. Also a man by the name of Joey Yeswald, Al Saxton, Williams Scortamaglia, who owned Henry's Bar. So there's six guys. They pile into Butch's car. And they go up to the residence, and there they find, members of the family shot and killed. And it was a horrible crime. And they pull into the car, and they get out, and they go up the front porch steps. And one of them says, "Be careful, there might be somebody in there." And Bobby yells, "I don't care." He wants to go in there. So at first he was worried about the people, being shot and try to get help. Now he says, "I don't care." So he goes inside. Inside the home, this big, expansive home in the foyer, they go to the master bedroom. They hit the light switch, and there is Ronald Sr., his wife Louise. There's a hole in the center of the man's back. It was the first indication that they weren't sleeping. There was dried blood everywhere. Louise's wounds are not clearly ascertainable because her body was buried beneath an orange blanket. And so on it went. A very gruesome, gruesome situation. And John DeFeo was killed. He was 9 years of age in the boys' room. The bodies of both of the boys face down like their parents. John's brother, Mark, age 12, Mark was dead. This poor boy had been in a wheelchair. He'd suffered a football injury and needed assistance for a crutch. And so they'd seen more than they'd wanted to, and they left the room and rejoined the others. And they were calling 911, giving the...
So this family's just been murdered.
Absolutely. Family's been completely murdered. Now, this guy, Ron Jr., was eventually arrested, and he claimed that he was possessed by a demon and so on and so forth. And I think that's where... And I think you showed it, Phil, on the Phil TV screen.
Yeah, they're right on our Phil TV screen, we have a picture of Ronald Jr. and a headline. This is from a newspaper of the day. DeFeo says he was possessed.
Now keep in mind when these murders were committed. These murders were committed about a year or so after a movie had come out called, what was it called?
The Exorcist.
There you go, bingo. Give the man a cigar. The Exorcist. So it was a film that was very high in the consciousness of the American people. Everybody was thinking about demonic possession. Everybody was thinking that demonic possession caused every problem that we had in the world and so on and so forth. At the time, I was a graduate student at UW and was getting my engineering degree. And I was kind of watching all of these events transpire and sort of as if someone was watching a parade. I was watching the parade of life, Phil, as we all were at that time, I guess, but as you do when you're that age. And I was thinking to myself how amusing it was. And the reason why I said that is because it seemed evident to me that this guy was as guilty as sin as soon as I heard the story. And as he, it came out that he was possessed by a devil, I said, this guy's...
But it sounded like just a story, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's just a story that he's given the cops so that they don't... this is a case, Phil, the Amityville murders, the slaughtering of an entire family, which harkens back to the terrible, terrible tragedy in Kansas to the Clutter family, the In Cold Blood story that harkens back to so many different stories like this. This is a story that shatters us when we hear of an entire family being murdered, and then we read of demonic possession. Well, naturally, you're going to start to hear about haunted houses, and you're going to start to hear about... And so we learn something about ourselves. We learn something about our psyches. And I learned something about myself that was troubling when I first heard of this, and I began to investigate it. I don't know how to say this, but I was aroused. You know...
Are you talking about sexually aroused, Professor?
Yes, yes, I found myself, it's difficult to try to describe this, but...
Is that healthy?
Well, I mean, I didn't act out in any criminal way. I didn't go and kill anyone, but I did find myself reading more and more about this case, and, finding it sexually exciting, and so I found out things about myself that were interesting. And I began to read more and more until finally I'll never forget the night I called a friend of mine. I said, you know, if I read any more about this Amityville horror, I'm going to want to marry the newspapers and books that I've got here because...
What? I don't know. What does that mean, you want to marry the newspapers and books?
Well, the story.
See, you're telling me that you started reading about the Amityville murders.
Don't get too wrapped up in any kind of amateur psychology. I'm healthy. I've never committed any crimes.
Well, you're healthy, but you're just... I mean, you brought it up, and you said you found out something about yourself. What is it?
Well, three guesses. The first two don't count. I mean, I was reading about the Amityville...
Well, I mean, you're asking me to guess, but you don't want me to get too far afield. Tell me what you found out.
I think that I was reading about the Amityville murders, and I suddenly found myself excited, sexually excited. treated more so than any woman I'd ever met. So I realized that academia was going to be my future, that this is where I found my real pleasure.
Well, you're talking about being a teacher. I don't understand this at all.
What's the problem?
All right, hold on for a minute. I got a minute to go before we take a break. Well, this is interesting.
Well, it's a little disturbing.
Well, I'm sorry, but yes, it is. But hey, you know, it's what we do, man. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, okay, man. I'm Phil. I'm not here just as your comic foil. I'm disturbed, and I'm weirded out, and...
Well, I am, too. I mean, Professor Mix is on the line here saying, hey, the Amityville Horror, and why I found myself sexually aroused.
Hey, guy's a freak.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Welcome to the Phil Hendry Show here. Welcome back. With us is Don Mix from University of Washington as we talk about the DeFeo murders from Amityville, lo these many years ago. It was 1974, so we're talking almost 40 years, 39 years, that Ronald Jr. walked into that bar, Henry's bar in Amityville, and said, my parents are dead, somebody help me, and a group of guys went with him and discovered the bodies not only of his father, but of four siblings, all of them dead, six people dead in total there in the house. And with me here is Don Mixa. If you don't want me to refer to what you just said, that's fine with me.
You know, I'm a Phil. I don't have a problem, you know, if Margaret's uncomfortable with it.
Well, you said that you've become sexually aroused by this case.
I just, what I'm saying is the following thing. I don't think we should get too excited about this. All I'm saying is, let's just say that that is a piece of information that we can put on the side. You know, just say, okay, Professor Mixa is sexually aroused by the Amityville murder case. Let's just put that up on the shelf with the other ingredients that make this an interesting interview. But
well, all right. So, and in the years since, you haven't committed any crimes. You haven't.
No.
Where do you work?
Well, right now I work out of my home. I'm working on a book about different things, you know, structural engineering, the collapse of the Minnesota bridges, and these kinds of things. You know, when will it happen again? Can it happen again? And, you know, I hate to say this, because the way you react, but it also gives me a little bit of a thrill.
What gives you a thrill? The fact that these bridges collapse? Well, it's a little bit of a shock when a guy says to me, hey, Phil, I'm going to come on your show and talk about the Amityville. Oh, and by the way, those murders give me a sexual thrill, and the collapse of bridges does, too.
I didn't say that. What I did say, well, yes, they do. But, again, you have to differentiate between me and, you know, and people that, you know, would be criminal. I'm not criminal.
Well, you're not criminal, Professor, but you're saying that you get some kind of a kick. Do you still get this sexual thrill reading about the Amityville crime?
That was just something that now it bores me. It's terribly boring.
Well, then why are you talking about it on the show?
Because I got a phone call from a guy, Mr. Dickman.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you said you knew about it.
Yeah, I knew about it. I mean, I'd studied it, but today I find it to be terribly dull. There's nothing really going on there. There's no ghosts, if that's what you're looking for. There's no ghosts. In that sense, I agree with you, Phil.
All right, so you don't think that there's such a thing as the Amityville haunting?
No, not at all. Absolutely not. These are absolute and utter fabrications by every single author and every single person that's ever lived there. And I'll tell you one other thing, too. Ronald DeFeo is a... this guy is a psychopath. I think he murdered his family just to do it. Over the years, he's come up with every kind of cockamamie story to explain it. First, they thought it was insanity. Then he said that he killed his parents along with his sisters, and then he said some other things. So he's this guy. He is a whole new level of liar. But Ron DeFeo is where he belongs, in prison. there's nothing about the Amityville murders that is all that strange. You've got a psychopath that killed his family. He's come up with every cockamamie story. There's no ghosts. There's no ghouls. There's no spirits. There's no... You know, I'm sorry. It's rather uncharacteristic of me.
I was going to say, I don't usually hear you mocking anybody.
But it comes out of me when I talk about this case. I was there on a tour about 2 years ago. They were giving tours of the Amityville neighborhood, and for laughs, I stood behind trees and did that because I was so disgusted, really, Phil, with the... I'd been disgusted for many years with the sensationalizing of this crime. And so as they were giving this tour, I stood behind a tree on the property, and an old lady walked, well, not an old lady, but a female of some age, and I jumped out and I went, ooh, you know, and she screamed, and I was accosted by some people. I said, why would you do that? I said, why are you here? I said, you're here to be scared, you know.
That's a very interesting point.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I said, you're here to be scared. And so the next tour bus the next day, and I did this for a solid week until I was... basically, I was threatened with arrest unless I left town, so I got on a Greyhound bus the next day.
You took a bus? That's interesting. You took a Greyhound bus?
Yeah, I took a Greyhound. I travel everywhere by Greyhound bus. I don't fly because two things. I can't afford it, but even if I could, I wouldn't get on an airplane if you if you paid me. That's asking for it, and no thank you.
Really? I had no idea. We're talking here with Don Mixa. Don is a professor of engineering. He lives in Seattle, Washington, and we're discussing with him a case that has had his interest for many years, or at least it did, the Amityville, the murders of the DeFeo family in Amityville in 1974, which is, what do you think, Don, of the, I'm just curious, so you don't fly anywhere.
Yeah, stay on that for a minute, Don. Why don't you fly?
Oh, I don't fly. I'm an engineer. That's why I don't fly. So I understand what we can do and what we can't do. I understand the dynamics of lift. I understand the dynamics of all the physical laws that apply. And there's no reason in the world that I can think of that we should be flying. This is a disaster waiting to happen. There's nothing holding the aircraft up.
Well, what about the lift and thrust and...
Well, those are words that someone came up with. Look, in order to sell this to somebody, you've got to, oh, there's lift, there's thrust. We don't know what makes an airplane fly. We're no more closer to the answer today than we were 60 years ago. And I curse. I heard Art Griego, a very dear friend of mine, by the way, I heard Art saying, G.D. the geese. Remember he was cursing geese?
Yeah.
Well, I curse the day that Charles Lindbergh ever drew his first breath, because that degenerate and his little publicity stunt that took him across the Atlantic Ocean, that dirty degenerate has created a multi-million dollar murder conspiracy which people are making millions off of, and which will result ultimately in the death of not hundreds, not thousands, but tens of millions when these aircraft eventually do collapse and fall to the earth. And it's very, very likely, Phil, you're going to have a whole lot of aircraft all at once just falling out of the sky, because we don't really understand why they're up there.
If we don't, now, Don, I want to ask you, if we don't understand why they're up there, then how is it that we get them to go up there?
I think it's a bluff. I think we bluff our way. I think we, well, I know if I go fast enough, it's going to...
Yeah, but well, hold on for a minute. If it's a, you're saying I know I go fast enough, it's going to go up. Why can't we study that and repeat it and say, look, we're up in the air, we're flying, so something made us do that.
Oh, it's not for want of trying. We've been trying for decades to figure it out. Okay, I'm going fast, I'm up. All right, here's what I think happened, and then you try and redo it, and no, you crash and die and burn. So you go back to the drawing board, and well, that wasn't it. And I've been in one of these seminars, Phil. I've said, look, if there's a plane flying, why? I don't know. All right, let's study this. He went down the runway. He's up in the air. He did. What did he do? All right, we know that he powered up. We know that he pulled the yoke back. We know this. All right, let's do it. So you try to duplicate it, and when you try to duplicate it, you wind up nose first into someone's home with nothing but fuel burning everywhere, and what they thought was you. Or it could be, somebody's dinner. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I'm awfully sorry to put it that way, Phil and Margaret, but
All right, we're talking here with Don Mixa of Mixa and Associates, engineering firm. I don't buy that for a minute. I can't believe that you're an engineer and you don't understand why we fly.
Phil, I'm as good an engineer as anybody you're going to get in the program. And if you want a guy to tell you the truth, I'll tell you the truth. You can get a million guys on here. They'll tell you, oh, here's why we fly. It's this, that, this, that, and it's the biggest load of horse dung that anybody has shoveled. Since they opened Santa Anita. I'm not going to go there. No, I won't join that parade. You can, I'll go ahead and stand here and watch, but I will not get in that parade, and I'm certainly not going to be shoveling the elephant dung behind it. You can get somebody else, and I'm not going to be the drum major either. I'll watch that parade go down the street, and you get someone else to put on a short skirt, throw the baton. Not me. No, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Don. I appreciate your joining us tonight.
Just remember, Mixa is my MICKSA, and we do. But I'm gonna be doing a book on this DeFeo thing, because this guy is a liar and a cheat, and DeFeo's a liar. There's no ghosts, and I've taken. I don't know. Greyhound owes me, by the way, Phil. They gave me a voucher because the toilet didn't work on the last trip out, and they owe me money on that voucher because I couldn't use it. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, can you contact Greyhound?
I did, and they didn't return my call. So.
All right. Don Mixa, thank you very much, sir.
You got it, Phil.
And,
You know something? I don't want to talk to him anymore.
Hold on for a minute.
I thought it was pretty interesting, some of the things that he was going to say.
Well, and I wouldn't go that far either. I mean, obviously, there's something, there's a screw loose there. But I think he's right about the Amityville thing, you know.
Well, what do you think? What do you think about his, there, I held a belch back. Are you happy? And I've got nothing but pain and... Oh, God.
Well...
Okay, I'm better. What do you think of his, the whole thing about flying?
I don't know, but we had him on the show to talk about the... well, I think he's wrong. I think that there's something wrong with him. But we had him on the show to talk about the Amityville thing, and I agree with that.
What do you think about Amityville?
I think he's right. I think the guy's I think this guy DeFeo is a psychopath who's just lying and gets his kicks lying. He went up, he killed his family, who knows why. He figured he'd kill him and get away with it, and you know, or he's a disorganized psychopath. He killed him and he really didn't know what he was going to do. But then he tries to plead insanity, and then he says that his sisters helped him, and he's changed his story so many times, as was noted by one of the investigators. The guy says you should approach anything he says with caution. I wouldn't believe anything he says. I would just chalk it up to this. A psychopathic killer without any empathy who decided one night to kill his entire family because it seemed like the best thing to do for his life and his life alone at that time. And then he tried some cockamamie way of getting out of it. It didn't work. Tried to plead insanity. Didn't work. And now he's in prison for the rest of his life. And that's what I think about that. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. The Bobby Dooley podcast is available right now for you and yours. You can check out Bobby on the Sideshow Network, but you can also get a link to the Bobby Dooley podcast at philhenryshow.com. Also, our daily classic podcast, and tomorrow, a daily show podcast. All there at philhenryshow.com. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here. And, well, there we are. We're Born to be Wild again, man. I was just reading up on the transcript of the Amityville, the actual 911 call to the operator there in Amityville. And they have a transcript of it. And the phone call was made by a friend of Bobby, Robert DeFeo's. It was a guy by the name of Joey Yeswit. This is the Suffolk County Police. May I help you? That doesn't sound like a 911 call, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So I'm trying to remember when 911 was actually introduced, and I'm sure I can look it up, but that doesn't sound like what a 911 operator would say. A 911 operator obviously would answer 911. Nonetheless, it was, and they don't identify it as a 911 call. They just identify it as an emergency call. It says, this is the Suffolk County Police. May I help you? We have a shooting here. DeFeo, sir, what is your name? Joey Yeswit. Can you spell that? Yes. Yeswit. Yeswit. Your phone number? I'd even know, he says, I don't even know if it's here. There's, I don't have a phone number here. Okay, where are you calling from? It's in Amityville. Call up the Amityville police, and it's right off Ocean Avenue in Amityville. Austin, Ocean Avenue. What's the Ocean Avenue? Off of where? It's right off Merrick Road, Ocean Avenue. Merrick Road, what's the problem, sir? It's a shooting. There's a shooting. Anybody hurt? Huh? Anybody hurt? Yes, it's, everyone's dead. What do you mean, everyone's dead? I don't know what happened. Kid came running into the bar. He says, everybody in the family was killed, and we came down here. Hold on a second, sir. Now a cop comes on the line. Hello? Hello? What's your name? My name is Joey Yeswit. George Edwards? George Edwards? No, he says, Joe Yeswit. How do you spell it? What? How many times do I have to spell it? Y-E-S-W-I-T. Where are you at? I'm on Ocean Avenue. What number? I don't have a number here. There's no number on the phone. What number on the house? I didn't even know that. Where are you at? Ocean Avenue and what? In Amityville. Call up the Amityville police and have someone come down here. They know the family. Amityville? Yeah, Amityville. Okay, now, tell me what's wrong. I don't know. Guy came running into the bar. Guy came running into the bar and said that his mother and his father are shot. We ran down to his house, and everybody in the house is shot. I don't know how long, you know, so, okay, so what's the address of the house? Hold on, let me go look up the number, all right? Hold on. 112 Ocean Avenue, Amity. Okay, that's Amityville or North Amityville? Amityville, right on South America Road. Is it right in the village limits? It's in the village limits, yeah. Okay, what's your phone number? I don't even have one. There's no number on the phone. All right, where are you calling from? Public phone? No, I'm calling from the house because I don't see a number on the phone. You're at the house itself? Yeah. How many bodies are there? I think they said four. There's four? Yeah. All right, you stay right there at the house, and I'll call the Amityville Village PD, and they'll come on down. That doesn't sound like a 911 call.
No, that's one of the old emergency calls that you would make, and you'd get the operator, and the operator would transfer you to the police. And that was the county police.
Yeah, that was a county sheriff.
Well, they didn't call it county sheriff. They called it...
Whatever. It was a county... Yeah, it was a county cop.
It was the county cop, but not the sheriff.
What difference does it make? It was a county cop. And the county cop said that he would call up the local village cop.
The village cop?
Yeah, because they got villages back there.
In New York?
Yeah. They have villages in California, too.
Well, they have Westlake Village, but that's a fake village.
Yeah, that's kind of a fake one, because if you go there, it doesn't look like a village.
Oh, well, whatever, man, whether it's a fake village. What do you mean a fake village? It's called a village, okay? Nonetheless, the villages they have in New York are like real villages.
Why?
Because they go back to the times when they had villages. The ones they got out here ain't villages. The ones they got out here...
The ones they got out here are ghost towns and stuff.
Yeah, that's the ones they have.
What do you mean ghost towns? They got towns out here, man. That's what they got, towns. No villages, just a town. I ain't never heard of anybody out here calling anything a village other than people that want it to be, oh, well, move to such and such village. Like it's a big baloney come-on for people to move to the houses.
Well, it's a marketing ploy is what you're saying, Phil. There's no reason to denigrate it. I think it's a marketing ploy to get people attracted, yes.
Okay, yeah, because the idea of living in a village... Why are we even talking about this, man? I want to talk about Amityville, okay?
Yeah, we're talking about village.
It's called the Amityville Village or whatever, but that was what happened, and that is the initial call, and it was made by one of the men in the bar that was this group of men that were rousted out of this bar by this guy DeFeo running in there and screaming bloody murder about his whole family being killed. Although I think what I read was he actually said, my mother and father have been shot. My mother and father have been shot. That's probably what gave credence to some belief that this man might have been innocent. Because if you are if you're the perpetrator of the murder, would you not say that would you not name the number of people that have been killed unless you are, you know, thinking?
Well, and you're trying to throw people off.
Yeah, and I think that plays into what this guy is all about. He's changed his story. All of these cats that change their stories. These guys are absolute, total psychopaths. Their whole kick is to control people and to manipulate them and make them do the dance that they want them to do. Why? Because that's what their lives are all about. You can say they're bored sitting in jail, but it's more than that. Even if they were on the outside, that's what they'd be doing. even if they were free people, that's what they'd be doing, because they don't have any other reason to live other than to control and manipulate the lives of other people. So there is the Amityville horror. What other murders do you want me to look up here tonight?
Well, there's been a number that you've talked about down through the years, Phil, that I found fascinating.
What about another shark story?
Get out of here with shark stories. What are you talking about?
You got a ghost story with a shark.
That would be interesting. Are there any ghosts having been eaten by sharks?
I'm not familiar with any, no.
Where would they be?
What do you mean, where would they be? Where are ghosts? They're in the hereafter.
Yeah, but what are they going to haunt? Like the ocean?
That's a good point. What are they haunting?
Well, they're haunting the shark. I don't know. They're haunting the shark. You can't haunt a shark, can you?
I guess if you're a ghost, you can do any damn thing you want. I don't think the shark is going to much give a damn about being haunted by, what, a human? Is that what you're saying?
Don't look at me like I'm flipped out.
Well, don't ask me if you can. I don't think any shark victim has ever haunted anybody or anything. How about that? As far as I can tell, I don't think that that's been the case, because that just... Anyway, we'll be back with more on our Halloween night as we look into some of these cases, both solved and unsolved. If you ask me, they're all solved. I mean, you can pretty much... I think modern crimes have probably named the right suspect, the perpetrator. Maybe they haven't been able to convict. Maybe they haven't even been able to arrest. But, I mean, with the modern forensics and that kind of stuff, I think people have been... Even in the Zodiac case, they feel that they had the man.
Who was that?
What was that one guy, that gym teacher?
Gym teacher?
Yeah, anyway, we'll be back. Phil Henry Show. Wash away my